The Skinflint podcast brought to you by Nextmune UK, the specialist in veterinary dermatology and immunotherapy in association with elearning.vet.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Skinflint, diving deep into the layers of veterinary dermatology. Today's episode is all about sustainability in veterinary dermatology. And in fact, big news. Ding, 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 ding. We are thrilled to announce that, thanks to you incredible listeners, we have hit a milestone of 10,000 downloads, which proof that your sustainable listening habits are in full swing, as well as the fact that my utter nonsense at the beginning hasn't put you off. So, 10,000 downloads of Skinflint, and keep them coming. Don't forget to subscribe and recommend to your colleagues and friends who are interested in dermatology as well. But joining us on this episode, as ever, is the remarkable Sue Patterson, a distinguished dermatologist and the RCVS president as well now. Sue is actually perfect for today's podcast. Not only does Sue have the expert scoop on the sustainable dermatology practices that we're going to be chatting about, but as we mentioned before, she's eco-friendly with her love for nature, so much so she's living and walking among the lakes of the Lake District. Hello, Sue.
Hi, John. I think probably what our lovely listeners do is probably they fast forward over the first bit just to get to the nitty bit in the middle. But I don't want to break that to you. But thank you very much for that very kind introduction. It's lovely to be speaking to you again and to our lovely listeners. Yes, looking forward to a good podcast today.
Yeah, it should be. It should be. And of course, I should introduce our behind the scenes incredible producer, Paul Heisman, who's the man who makes this run smoother than a well-groomed coat of fur. And in fact, rumor has it, Paul, that you're so committed to sustainability that you once tried to compost an outdated microphone. Is that true?
Well, I cannot confirm neither deny the rumors, but what I will say is that online education is, of course, extremely eco-friendly and sustainable. And it's wonderful to see, as you mentioned, so many listeners to the podcast, because it's always good, isn't it, when you put so much effort into creating something and then it's not just one man and his dog that turns up. So to have 10,000 downloads is just incredible. Really looking forward to today's topic and today's speaker. So looking forward to jumping straight back in.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we're joined today by Monica Linick, a dermatologist and a champion for Vet Sustain. So Sue, you're the person who's lined Monica up for us. She'll be a great person to chat to today.
She absolutely will. She's passionate about veterinary dermatology, but she's also passionate about sustainability. So hopefully we can tap in on her extensive knowledge and talk about ways in which we can perhaps work in a more sustainable way, not just in practice, but as veterinary dermatologists as well. So I hope we'll talk a little bit about antibiotics and also a little bit about diet. So really looking forward to chatting to Bonnie in a minute.
Absolutely. Well, without further ado, then let's bring in Monica.
So today we're going to talk about sustainability. And obviously, because we are a Skinflint podcast, we're going to talk about sustainability and how that applies to veterinary dermatology practice. And I'm absolutely delighted that we have a wonderful German dermatologist with us, who's Monica. And Monica is going to help guide us through some of her thoughts around sustainable dermatology. So, Monica, do you just want to introduce yourself to our audience first? And then we'll start and have a bit of a conversation about sustainable dermatology, which I know you are really passionate about. So, Monica, introduce yourself.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you for the invitation, and I'm happy to join this podcast. My name is Monica Linick, and I'm a diplomat of the ECVD. I worked in a referral practice in Germany, and I stopped working clinically for 2 years now. And since 2019, I'm active in a group in Germany, which is called Parents for Future. This is a big group. I think it's only really big group in Germany. I have to emphasize that we are not comparable to Extinction Rebellion or Last Generation. So this is a group which unites people with or without children, but who are older than the Fridays for Future and have the same goals regarding climate justice. So that's my incentives to work for sustainability in veterinary practice as well.
And obviously you're passionate about veterinary dermatology and the ways in which we can work as veterinary professionals in a more sustainable way as well. I know you've championed that at some of the European conferences, and I know at the most recent veterinary conference we had, you arranged some of the sustainability stuff there.
Yes.
First of all, just define for me, what do we mean by sustainability and why is this important?
What do we mean by sustainability? I think best is probably known the United Nations Sustainability or Sustainable Development Goals. I think it means that we have to meet the needs of the present generation without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. And of course, this involves that we have to maintain a balance to ensure that our activities do not deplete or harm the natural resources and the ecosystem, so that future generations have to fear that they can't create enduring systems. So
essentially, this is all about making sure that we work hard to make sure that the earth will be a place that can be enjoyed by the generations that come after us, isn't it? Without compromising it, yeah. Which is really important. And I suppose, you know, even though it may only be small changes we can make, there are things that we do when we look at veterinary dermatology that are not sustainable. So what sort of things do you think we can do as veterinary dermatologists and as veterinary nurses and as just vets generally as part of our dermatology practices to actually improve the way in which we work and work more sustainably in a much greener way?
I think there are many hotspots in small animal veterinary and practices, and also this implies veterinary dermatology, of course. I think all practices have the biggest carbon footprint in the fossil energy for heating and electricity.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, so I suppose dermatology is a very visual subject, isn't it? And we know certainly in the UK that a huge part of the carbon footprint of the National Health Service here is down to travel. Do you think there is a place in veterinary dermatology, for example, for telemedicine? Should veterinary dermatologists be doing more remote consulting? Because that perhaps makes them more accessible to members of the public and to veterinary surgeons without actually increasing their carbon footprint. Is that something you do in Germany? Is that something you're aware of?
I think there is more and more telemedicine in Germany. And I think in veterinary dermatology, we have the possibility, at least for rechecks, to do it on telemedicine or give a first advice. Of course, it's very difficult because for the veterinary dermatology, we need to touch the skin. We need to make the skin more aware by clipping the hair. We need to smell, of course, as well, do cytology. So this is probably very difficult to avoid, or it's very difficult to avoid any visit in our clinic. But I think for rechecks, it would be possible. And also if we advise our referring practices, to how to do cytology, and so they can do the cytology and we make the evaluation with telemedicine, I think this would lower the travel and mobility carbon footprint of our clients, yes.
So essentially, it could never replace a hands-on consultation, a hands-on diagnostic investigation. But it could complement it. It could reduce our carbon footprint to try and make us work
definitely.
In a more sustainable way. Yeah.
I'm definitely sure that we can do this.
And I really enjoyed your pun, Monica, on hotspots. Obviously, that appeals to my sensibilities. And I just wondered what in veterinary dermatology, the kind of the biggest hotspots that you would say, areas that as a vet or nurse working in a general practice could potentially look at with dermatology in mind?
Suppose probably one of the first things would be drug usage.
Yes, of course. This would be something we as veterinary dermatology just have to think about, the environmental impact of the drugs we use, like antibiotics and antiparasitics. So I think the antibiotic stewardship is now already implemented in our thinking, how we use antibiotics. If we go back 10 years ago, I think this was not the case in veterinary medicine, and especially in veterinary dermatology, as we used antibiotics all the time. And the antiparasitics, I think, especially the ectoparasitic drugs, we are not so aware that these really have a big impact on environment, and especially the topical ones. So, yes. And also, of course, topical antiseptics like chlorhexidine. We use it all the time, and we have to rethink it and make better decisions when we use it, how we use it, how often we use it. And this is real rethinking, changing our habits and our practices and procedures, how we use these drugs. Yes.
That's really interesting, Monica. And I think encouraging, perhaps hopefully for people, because as you say, these are things that we are thinking about anyway, whether it be how we use our antiparasitics or how we consider our use of antibiotics more carefully. But these, of course, all kind of fold into the envelope of sustainability. And I'm just interested in one thing you mentioned there about using antibiotics topically and systemically. When it comes to using a systemic or a topical treatment for skin with dermatology in mind, is one better than the other, would you say, in terms of it's a good sustainable practice?
I'm not sure. Did you ask more specifically about antiparasitics or any topical product?
When would you reach for an antibiotic, and when would you look to use something topically in your cases? Can you use topical treatment in all cases, or are there some where it's not going to work?
I think that if we have a deep pyoderma, for example, probably it will not work. And it depends on the deepness. It depends on the duration of the disease. But I think we now are aware that we always need a sustainability susceptible test before, to test which antibiotic with the least tier, let's call.
So we're using antibiotics responsibly based on cultures, and then looking at the most appropriate. Yeah, the most appropriate drug to use, aren't we? Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think, I absolutely agree with you about deep infections, but I still think, and I suspect there is an evidence base to support it, that topical treatment can reduce the length of the course of antibiotics and improve the response to antibiotics if you use topical treatment at the same time. Would that be your clinical experience?
Yeah, of course. Definitely. The length of treatment with antibiotics will be reduced by topical antiseptics. There are a lot of things we can use, so we always should combine this. And whenever we can avoid the use of systemic antibiotics, we should try to use topical treatment alone. And there are a lot of studies which have shown that the topical treatment alone is as good as in superficial pyoderma, as good as combination or antibiotic alone.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And you talked about chlorhexidine and the fact that that is something that has got, obviously, it's an ecotoxin. But I mean, given a choice, I suppose chlorhexidine before an antibiotic, would you have another topical that you would use instead of chlorhexidine that's got the same degree of efficacy?
hypochlorite, for example.
Okay.
Would be, or
a much better environmental profile than chlorhexidine.
Yes,
would
chlorhexidine.
Would
say. Yeah, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I would have to say I'm a convert to those types of product just because of the environmental profile. And I think it's really important as well, isn't it, that although we work sustainably, we need to make sure we don't compromise animal health and welfare. So it's great looking for green alternatives, but the green alternatives have to work, don't they, in order for us to be able to use them, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. But there are a lot of products that have been shown to work. So, and even more modern ones, like probably using the ones you made studies on with.
Oh, the biophotonic therapy, the fluorescent stuff. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there are technologies. You're absolutely right, Moni. There are technologies being developed to replace topical treatment completely.
Topical treatment, especially in use, like you did the studies on, no?
Absolutely. I think it's got a real part to play. The problem I have, of course, is that there is a price added to those things, and again, like all of these, we have to, as veterinary surgeons, we're practicing private medicine in the UK as you are in Germany. We have to be aware of the cost to our owners, and that obviously can compromise our ability to treat. So what we need is my perfect drug would be a low cost, environmentally sensitive, effective topical treatment, and if I can have one of those, I'll be happy.
Next Mune brings you Contigo, a high-purity hypochlorous acid skin spray with 96% hypochlorous content and no sodium hypochlorite. With strong antiseptic properties, Contigo can help manage wounds, cuts, abrasions, and other skin damage without irritating the skin or interfering with wound healing. Contigo from Next Mune UK.
I have a question for you, well, for you both, really, I guess, while we're on the topic of drugs and antiseptics, all products that we would use, when it comes to disposing them, you know, a really sort of practical question, really. So let's say you've got some chlorhexidine left over or something of that like. What's the best way to get rid of it? Or you've got some leftover antibiotics, say, for example. Are there practices that we as vets can do and nurses, or encourage owners to do, to help in that regard?
Yes, I think there is a new guidelines to bring back return all unused or out of date antibiotics, all medicines, so that
pollutants
of concerns are not only thrown through in the waste or down the sink, mm-hmm. but are really returned to the clinics and deposed in the official way. It's sometimes difficult because in Germany we don't have a real good waste disposal for medicines, but I think this should be more implemented in the future.
And you're absolutely right. We have what's called an antibiotic amnesty in the UK, and it runs in conjunction with Antimicrobial Awareness Week. And it's not just a veterinary initiative, it's in a partnership with the NHS, and we encourage people to return unwanted antibiotics rather than putting them in the bin, rather than going into landfill, rather than them flushing them down the toilet. So yeah, it's a big campaign, and it's growing pace. It started quite a small thing 12 months ago, but this year it's going to be much, much bigger. And we've got really huge engagement from many of the corporates and the big independent practices in the UK. And it's great. It's great to see. So they can go to pharmacies or they can go to vets, and they have appropriate ways in which they can be disposed of. So they have ways they can dispose of out of use drugs and sharps and things. So they all go in part of that clinical waste. So yeah, it's set up to do that. There's obviously a cost implication associated with it, but it's part of our responsible antibiotic use, is making sure we justify the prescription, making sure they're used appropriately, and making sure they're disposed of appropriately. It's all part of that same package, I suppose.
Mm. Yeah, that's really helpful. And I mean, you know, really, it's logical as well, maps onto what we know from our everyday, you know, recycling and trying to do things more responsibly in the home, that it makes sense as well, doesn't it, to dispose of those things in the correct manner. And for us as vets, you know, we're the ones who can appropriately do that. You mentioned scalpels there, Sue. Another question I had for you both. I'm getting a bit long in the tooth now. So when I started in practice, they were just getting rid of reusable syringes, and everything was kind of reusable. I always think about this with, you know, glass milk bottles. you know, is there any benefit to us going back to reusing things in practice, like, I don't know, like scalpel blades? And I know some dermatologists have done that before for skin scrapes. Are there ways that we can go in dermatology, particularly in mind, back to reusing things rather than single use plastics and the like?
We are now so used to single-use plastic articles. I don't think that we can go back to glass syringes, but I don't know what Sue thinks, but we used before not single-used biopsy devices, but reusable ones, and this could be sterilized and reused again. So I think we have a lot of possibilities to use more things in a not single use way. So even surgical cloths, for example, theater shoes, towels, and all these things, they could be re-sterilized. And why not
do that?
And I absolutely agree. And again, one of the things that our NHS has done in the UK, Moni, is they have developed some decision-making tools around different products. So we know that, you know, not all plastics are equal. Some plastics will take several years to break down, whereas some will never break down. And I think, you know, my personal feeling is, as vets, we should be putting more pressure on manufacturers to produce products for us that are recyclable, that can be reused, you know, so that we can be more responsible. I think at the moment, and again, this is my personal feeling, is a lot of it's driven by price. And there has to be some compromise where we're prepared to perhaps pay a little bit more to have a product that's much more sustainable. So I'm certainly saying I absolutely agree with you, but we need to have pharma companies that are going to work with us, allow us to work in a much more sustainable way.
Yeah, and hopefully some of those practices are getting there. Just while we were talking about sterilization, which would you recommend? Would cold chemical sterilization versus autoclaving something versus like an antimicrobial solution that you soak things in? Is there a better way, sustainability wise, would you recommend to sterilize things?
So my answer to that, John, would be, I'm not sure anybody's done the work. And it would be about, I mean, it's a bit like, do you use a paper towel or do you use a hand dryer? There are so many different factors, because that sterilizing solution may not have the same carbon footprint, but the environmental impact of disposing of that sterilizing solution as you flush it, as you know, put it down the sink, absolutely massive. So again, you know, but again, these are questions that we need answers to. And again, I would love to have pharma companies who are talking more about the life cycle of product. You know, what does it cost to, what's the carbon footprint to produce this? What's the carbon footprint when we use it? What's the carbon footprint when we dispose of it? I just think so much more that we need to do.
I think sterilization, or like hot sterilization or autoclavation, as soon as you can produce green energy by solar or photovoltaic panels or any other device, then this might be the better way, because you have less. Of course, as soon as you have green energy, then this possibility to reuse things by sterilization is becoming lesser carbon footprint, of course.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's so, I mean, it's so interesting because there aren't just really clear answers on, you know, on some of the, like you say, it's about everybody thinking about it. And you have people in practice doing something they feel is sustainable and a colleague saying, well, actually, no, because you're not then doing this, which would be more sustainable. But I guess at least would you say if people are having those conversations and thinking about it, the more they're thinking about it, then we're all thinking about it and we're more likely to pull together into as ways, as you put it, Monica, I thought was a really good way of thinking about it in terms of future generations, that then we hand to them that baton and gradually we just become much better and better about the way that we do things.
I think you are. It's true, but of course, sustainability, carbon footprint, carbon neutral is more or less a slogan now. And we have to be aware that there's a lot of greenwashing and that you can buy any product which is carbon neutral. And I think we have to make aware people that this is not always true. And what is meant by really carbon neutral, for example. And so we must also in our profession be aware that we don't use it only like slogan or, yeah, but we have really to think about how to get it in practice. And this is not so easy done. Even with the low-hanging fruits we talk sometimes about, and there are a lot of things which seem to be easy, just to shut down your computer whenever you leave it. It's a habit, and it's always difficult to change habits you had for years.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Moni, one of the other big things, of course, as dermatologists that we do, allergies are a really common presenting sign for us. And we've talked a little bit about ectoparasiticides and antibiotics and topical treatment. But what about dietary choice? When we're talking about food trialing an animal, how can we do that to make sure we put an appropriate food trial in place, but we're sustainable? What advice would you give around that?
Of course, it's difficult when all people now change to insect food, for example, or something like this. Then we probably have only the choice to go back to beef. But of course, we have to rethink about the use of livestock animals as food for our animals anyway. And then we have to think about our diets, and as we always choose a diet which has not been fed before, it becomes more and more difficult. I'm not sure what the best diet is, but of course, the more processed the diet is, the more energy it needs to be produced. And so probably home-cooked diet would be the best choice, not only as we said before, that we know what it is in, but also regarding the carbon footprint a diet has. That's my personal opinion.
So to put in place a novel protein diet, I mean, obviously, I would suggest it would be difficult to put a novel protein insect-based diet in place, but you would recommend perhaps a vegetarian home-cooked diet as a sustainable, low-allergy option for food trialing?
I think we have with a vegetarian diet in dogs and cats, of course, in cats even more, be very cautious, because if we really maintain the protein they need, then we need really the advice and recipe from company or institute who is calculating all the things the animal needs for the next 6 weeks. So an only vegetarian diet, I think it's not so easy to do for our animals or for dogs, and especially for cats, I think it's not possible. But of course, there are probably some sources of protein we can choose still for our animals. And maybe, like if we use soya or something like this is not more sustainable than to use beef, probably, because it's produced in the, for example, in South America, in grand, in big plantages. Is it?
So, all right.
I'm not sure what is really the best advice, but I think we have to rethink the whole food for our and how we feed our animals, because of course livestock animals have a big, like beef has a big imprint in our environment and emissions.
Agriculture,
I think it's 30%.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. But I suppose the other thing to counter that argument would be, yes, we need to look carefully at the protein source. But when we're looking at dog food, it's not just the protein, is it? It's the travel, it's the packaging, all of those are factors as well. And so do you think there's an argument where, again, I come back to this, where we should be asking pet food manufacturers to, you know, perhaps give us some indication as the carbon footprint of food, so that, you know, we can make informed decisions? Do you think that's something we should be pressing for?
Of course, yes. I think this is all about, when we talk about scope 3, that we have to press our suppliers to tell us how much the carbon footprint is for the products we use or we purchase, to calculate our carbon footprint in our practices as well. So yes, I think we should have of each product the carbon footprint.
So if we were to sort of try and sum everything up, and I was to put you on the spot and of course have time to think about this, what would be your top 3 tips as a dermatologist or as a vet practicing dermatology? What 3 tips could you give us to be more sustainable? What would be your top 3 tips?
Antibiotics. I think rethinking about how we use antiparasitics. I think this is a big issue for me now, as the new studies show that we have big impact with the antiparasitics we use in veterinary, in our pet animals. But I think also easier things are probably to think about are, for example, waste, the waste hierarchy. So that we try to avoid waste, and paper is one of the things we still use a lot of paper, and it's the best way to start with, to reduce and also reuse and recycle, use recycled products. As far as the statistics are, computer and the use of computer didn't reduce the paper use. So I think this would be a good way, not only for a veterinary dermatologist, but for all veterinarians to start with, for example.
That's really useful. So antibiotic use, antiparasiticides, and then thinking about things like waste, and particularly thinking about paper. I think that's really, really great advice. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Monica, for joining us and just sharing some of your thoughts about how in veterinary dermatology we can think more sustainably. It's been so helpful to have your insight. And thank you again very much from all of us for joining us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure for me.
Thank you.
Well, that was a really interesting conversation with Monica, and certainly there's a lot for us to chew over there on sustainability. But of course, before we go, it's time for a bit of inverted commas fun twist at the end of on our sustainable chat. I remember in my youth, guys, a chap called Captain Planet. I don't know if either of you remember Captain Planet. He's a hero, going to take pollution down to zero. So even back in the 90s, they were thinking about sustainability, just maybe not quite enough. But I wondered if you were a superhero fighting, well, Sue, in your case, the sustainability of pet skincare, what would your eco-friendly superhero name be? And what would your sustainable superpower or gadget be that you would wield on the world of veterinary dermatology?
Do you know, John, it sometimes worries me how long you spend thinking up these questions. And I do think you need to get out more. So I'm not sure. It would probably have to be Green Sue. I don't know if that's an appropriate name for a superhero. It's probably just destroyed all my kudos if I have ever had any. My superpower would, I don't know, I suppose my superpower would be to get rid of all plastic and replace it with sustainable alternative to that. Because I think as dermatologists, we use tons of plastic in syringes and in bottles and all the rest of it. So that would be my superpower, to remove all plastic as Green Sue. How's that?
Images of you in like a green cape, touching things and turning them from plastic into more sustainable materials. That's brilliant, Sue. That's exactly what I wanted. Thank you. And Paul, from the online education world, what superhero would you be?
Oh, the pressure's on after Sue's answer, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think, do you know what would be fantastic? Because as an online veterinary CPD provider, people always ask me, are you trying to take over from the shows and the in-person stuff? And we're absolutely not. You know, I think it works in tandem. And I think classic superhero, or superpower, I should say, sorry, is to fly, isn't it? And wouldn't it be wonderful if everyone that was going to London Vet Show or the European conference that's just happened, wouldn't it be great if we could all fly there instead of getting trains and planes?
Yeah, it would. I mean, you'd have to have sort of like in-person or people-to-people air traffic control. But yeah, I'm going to have to go away and think about that, Paul, I think, and then I'll come back to you. Yeah, but thank you, guys. Fantastic answers. And for putting up with me and, yeah, for joining us. Everyone listening home or wherever you are in your sustainable practices, listening to your sustainable CPD education. Don't forget to register this with One CPD or whatever your CPD platform is if you're listening in another country. And listen out for us again and subscribe for the next Skinflint podcast, where we'll find out some more about the world of veterinary dermatology. Until then, it's farewell from Sue.
Farewell.
It's farewell from Paul.
Farewell.
And it's farewell from me. Farewell.
The Skinflint podcast brought to you by Nextmune UK, the specialist in veterinary dermatology and immunotherapy in association with elearning.vet.
That was a bit of a twist at the end, wasn't it?
Sorry, yeah. That threw you both off then, didn't it?